Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. It's been a great while since Fox has presented a made-for-TV movie. Well, that while ends Tuesday night with the premiere of the new made-for-TV movie, Daughters of the Bride. Director Annette Heywood-Carter joins me next. Also ahead, meet Reboot Studios, Bupkis will be back, breaking Paramount Plus news, our new classic trivia question and prize, and oh, Turner Classic Movies, Where Art Thou? That's the takeaway of the week. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and presenting the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Acast, Odyssey, and other leading podcast destinations. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Thank you, wherever you are across the country, around the world, for joining the program all about TV's current and future. 71 degrees at the top of the hour. Delighted to have you aboard. Great guests coming your way in the hour ahead. And we invite you to be part of the program. It's very simple. Pick up the phone, wherever you are, and give us a call with this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the world here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, or TuneIn Radio. And don't forget, we have a chat room for you to use. It's SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, or TuneIn screen, and other people will be live with you. Annette Heywood-Carter, the director of the new Fox made-for-TV movie, Daughter of the Bride, will join us live from Santa Monica, California, after these news notes. Several promised TV series are getting a financial angel via Reboot Studios. The intent? Expand the number of programs with Jewish life and culture subject matter through seed funding and production contracts. Scripted and unscripted series that Reboot is working with now include Comedy Quest, The Boring Stuff, a Bollywood Jewish community drama, historical profile Tribe set in Baltimore, and Las Vegas set Miss Flamingo. Now quickies, Bupkis will be back for a second season on Peacock. Pete Davidson, Edie Falco, and Joe Pesci will continue to co-star. Coming-of-age original film The Slumber Party arrives on Disney Channel July 27th. Disney Plus will replay it the day after. Mark Millar's long-awaited next Netflix series, The Chosen One, begins August 16th. The series adapts Millar's graphic novel, American Jesus. And breaking news from Paramount Plus. In the last half hour, four series from that service has received cancellation notices. Reese Rise of the Pink Ladies after one season this spring, and The Game reboot and Queen of the Universe after two. What's more, Star Trek Prodigy was also dropped, and that, by the way, was a reversal of a second season renewal call last fall. All of the series may have an opportunity to survive this situation by being shopped to other content services, and we'll keep you posted if, in fact, that happens. And that is news notes for today. We started this week with a wonderful interview with the celebrated director of episodic television, film, and theater, Oz Scott. And we're going to end the week with another director who's joining us right now from Santa Monica, California. She is directing Fox's new made-for-TV movie, Daughter of the Bride, which premieres next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time on your local Fox station. It's a pleasure to welcome Annette Heywood-Carter. Annette, welcome in.
Thank you so much.
How did you get this assignment to do the first Fox made-for-TV movie in quite a while?
Well, I have to say, I feel incredibly lucky to have been chosen for this. It was the perfect movie at the perfect time for me. And, you know, I got one of those fortuitous introductions to Mar Vista Entertainment. And, you know, the rest is history.
And Mar Vista is Fox's made-for-TV movies. They're also doing the original series as well. What inspired you to take this on? When I first looked at this, when I got the press release, it seemed to me like it was a mix of rom-com and wedding-com, especially given what some might think might be a take on the famous movie classic Father of the Bride.
Well, what attracted me to this, first of all, it's those things, and it's also a family film, and I love family films. But what really made me want to do this is the fact that it's an uplifting story. I was just feeling overwhelmed by just all of the things that are going on in the world. Just everybody's life was so stressful, and this was an opportunity to do something that was really positive, that would put a smile on people's faces, and I almost felt it was a calling to do that. This would have been a year ago, a little over a year ago. So it just felt like the world needed something that was happy and also thoughtful and meaningful. So that's what made me want to do it.
So explain what the plot is all about. And you've got some good actors to work with, Aidan Quinn, Marcia Gay Harden, and a relative newcomer, I guess, named Halton Sage and Andrew Richardson. So that's a pretty interesting quartet to work with.
Yeah, the casting was fantastic. So look, it's this great story, mother-daughter story. The mother-daughter are best friends. Daughter's in her 20s, and they've been best friends just for the daughter's entire life. Unbeknownst to the daughter, her mother has been secretly dating. And when her mother announces this and furthermore almost immediately gets engaged, it really kind of pulls the rug out from under the daughter. Daughter Kate, played by Halston Sage, just is very worried that their relationship is going to change. She doesn't really know how to share her mother with someone else. And quite frankly, her mother hasn't thought about how to share herself either with her daughter. So it's a story about them kind of coming to terms with that. The daughter, even though the daughter is actually officiating her wedding, she is also simultaneously sabotaging it, which is where a lot of the comedy comes from. And in the meantime, a handsome neighbor shows up in Kate's life, and Kate finds herself being gently pursued by this man and discovering that she's kind of interested in him too. So ultimately, the mother and the daughter have to rise up to the change that's coming about from these two relationships coming into their life, and they have to, work things out between themselves, which is really actually quite beautiful and quite tender at times.
Did you try in directing the film to reference anything personal, either from yourself or people you know, about this kind of situation?
Well, when I read the script, my daughter is in her 20s, and she lives in New York, and she's a very social person. She has a lot of friends, and just watching her navigate her circle of friends, I felt like I really understood what was going on for Kate. Obviously I understand what's going on for the mother, for Diane, because we're the same age, and I know what it means to be a woman with a 20-something daughter that you feel is, the most important thing in your life, that you have to help navigate and kind of get over that bridge into adulthood. But I also felt like I really understood Kate, her generation, and, what long-term love relationships and commitment means to that generation, which is very different from what it was to my generation.
Daughter of the Bride is Fox's new made-for-TV movie. It premieres next Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on your local Fox station. And we are speaking live from Santa Monica, California, with the director, Annette Heywood Carter. She joins us from Santa Monica, California this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Happy you're joining us as well on this Friday afternoon. Simon Albon with you live from the other side of the U.S. of A., New York, where it is 71 degrees at the top of the hour. And let's hear from you. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We won't be with you on Monday because yours truly is doing something he hasn't done in decades, go on jury duty. However, we hope that with jury duty going the way it sometimes does, that we will be with you next Friday. And boy, we have a big two-hour program in store for you to wrap up June. First up, we're going to talk about a new Hulu series called Secret Chef. It may be one of the most offbeat culinary competition series ever. And we will talk to the executive producer and showrunner, Patrick Dougherty. Then, one of the top personalities in the world of lifestyle television will join us, Genevieve Gorder. You know her from series on Home and Garden Television, DIY, Travel Channel, and she now has a brand new series on Crackle, the mega content service from Chicken Soup for the Soul Entertainment called At Home with Genevieve. And then, earlier this week, a television series out of Indianapolis, Indiana, that's been around for 13 years, has won local and regional Emmy Awards. It went national, syndicated by Trifecta Entertainment to 21 stations around the country. It's called Lifestyle Live. The executive producer of this new syndicated series, Peggy McClellan, will join us to start our second hour. And finally, we'll talk to the creator of one of the series pilots that was presented recently at the Tribeca Festival here in New York. The pilot is called Driven. It's about an Uber driver who has some very interesting things to deal with. The creator is David Scher, and he will join us live. That's all coming up next Friday, a week from today, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. In the Father of the Bride movies, Annette, Elizabeth Taylor got a big jump to fame by being the daughter of Spencer Tracy. Then the reboot, Kimberly Williams got a big jump to fame through Steve Martin. Your program has Halston Sage. How did you find her, and what things do you think will come from this role?
Well, I'm not exaggerating when I say that when I saw Halston in person and when she first started working on the part, I just felt like I was in the room with a young Julia Robertson. It was so incredible how similar the spirit was, like this kind of bigger than life and beautiful personality, you know, that's emerging from this beautiful person. This, you know, she's stunningly gorgeous. Her you know, her acting style, spontaneous and in the moment. And she was always a surprise. And those surprises, of course, are what make the film fun. And so that was, I really did feel like that maybe I was making a discovery here. Of course, Halston has a resume of work. So this wasn't the first time for her. But I did feel like maybe that this role was so perfect for her and was demanding things of her that she hadn't done before, that it actually might be a breakthrough film for her. So that was one of the most exciting things about making the film and working with Halston Sage.
Marcia Gay Harden has been a wonderful actress for years. She is currently riding high with the CBS series on Thursday night, So Help Me Todd. She's been renewed for a second season. She's won Emmys, other awards for her work. What was it like working with her?
Well, first of all, she's a master. She's a pro. She's the best. I was so lucky to have her. In a way, she was like that anchor, that grounding force on the set. She is such a generous actor, and her work with Halston really elevated this to an even higher level. When I first spoke with her about doing it, she wanted to do it for the same reason that I did. She has a daughter in her 20s, and she said, you know, when I read this, I could see my relationship with my daughter and so many of the things that happen in this. So she brought her personal experience and her heart to this in a way that connected with Halston and the other actors and really, really elevated it. She's such a joy to work with.
And how about the main men of the story, Aidan Quinn? I still remember him as sort of his James Dean breakout role in the NBC movie. It was an early Frost, the acclaimed AIDS drama, and also Andrew Richardson, who plays the other man in the drama.
Well, Aidan, I had worked with Aidan many, many years ago, back in the early 90s, I think it was, and he's just a great actor as well. But I have to say, you know, he's a real heartthrob for women of my generation, right? And I can't tell you how many people were just writing to me and saying, oh, my God, Aidan Quinn, oh, my God. So I feel so lucky to have him. And he's funny and delightful, and he's also a personal friend of Marcia's. And you can see that on the screen. You can see the connection between them that is really quite deep, that sometimes on a television movie, when you're moving really fast, when production is moving really fast, maybe you don't achieve that with the secondary relationship. So that was perfect. And then Andrew, I found Andrew through the casting director who sent me an audition tape, and I was not familiar with his work prior. And he was just so just natural and unassuming in a way that there was a requirement of this role. Something had to get Kate's attention. And I really thought of Kate as a sophisticated young woman. This is a young woman who has been around the block. She knows what she wants. She rejects almost everything that comes her way. And something had to get her attention. And there was this sweet, unassuming, confident confidence in Andrew that just was perfect. And I have to say, the chemistry between them is off the charts.
Where was the movie produced, and did production go smoothly?
Oh, production went very, very smoothly. I had great producers, Summer Crockett Moore and Tony Glazer. They are out of New York City. We began putting the project together as a New York production, but then took it to New Jersey because of the tax credits. The tax credits allowed us to make a bigger movie. It's just more money for the project. And we wound up in Cranford, New Jersey, which was a delightful town and just was really a beautiful little town to shoot the film in. And the crew came out of New York. And, you know, it just went really, really well.
New Jersey, by the way, Annette, is really becoming a major production center. There are studios being built in Newark. I believe Netflix is building a major production complex there. Lionsgate is building a major production complex there. It has really taken off in Newark and Trenton and points in between.
Yes, and Cranford is just outside of Newark. It's practically under the airport, which I know because there was a point where I had to abandon the idea of getting clean production sound because there were so many planes coming and going. But we were able to clean it up, and it wasn't a problem. And, you know, I have to say, I had never spent any time in New Jersey. It's a beautiful state. It's just beautiful. And the little townships, the people are so warm and accommodating. It just makes sense with the economics being what it is, with the tax incentives for film production and the communities being film-friendly communities, because they aren't all film-friendly, made it actually the perfect place for us.
Let's talk about the Annette Haywood Carter story. I understand you were an actress first, or actor first, before getting into directing. What made the transition happen?
No, I was not an actor. I was so not an actor. I wish I had been an actor, but I was just too shy. I just couldn't do it. I moved to L.A. to be a director, thinking that I would work my way up from camera. My first love was cinematography, but I arrived in L.A. at a time when women just didn't get to do any of the roles that I was trying to do. I couldn't be a DP. I couldn't be a director. Couldn't even really be a first AD. So I wound up doing the one job that was open to me as a woman, and that was script supervising, and it turned out to be a godsend because I worked on so many movies, including really, really big ones, and this was my film school. I had not gone to film school, so I learned to direct from really great directors, and I learned to do great shots from really great cinematographers, all Hollywood people. And so by the time I was able to direct my first movie, which was a 30-minute short called The Foot Shooting Party with Leonardo DiCaprio, I was more than ready. I was able and capable of making a really high-quality professional film as my first, you know, film out of the gate.
As a script supervisor, what was your favorite movie to be working on?
Well, you know, it's funny. I have to say that there are two, because I worked with Bruce Beresford on the movie Driving Miss Daisy, and working on a film that started on Broadway with a director who was just a consummate director with actors and with camera, I was able to really learn the craft. It's like, how do I direct actors? How do I talk to actors? How do I choreograph the camera with the actor, which is, you know, film blocking? And that was an absolute joy and is one of the most important ones for me. But the other one would have to be Cliffhanger. I was the script supervisor it was a Sylvester Stallone movie with Rennie Harlan directing, and that was just wild. We shot in Italy. We were helicoptered into the locations up, the mountain peaks. This was back in the day before you had VisFX to create all of these crazy shots, like people on a cable, sliding on a cable from one airplane to another, or dropping 4,000 feet to their death in a canyon. All of that had to be done live. And it was also back in the day before there was video assist. So the script supervisor sat right next to the camera, right next to the director. And in some cases, like in those airplane shots, you actually sat inside the legs of the tripod because it was the only space for you. So I really love both the really big films and the kind of what I call the perfect dramas.
I understand that early on you worked with Joan Darling, who some of us remember mm-hmm. as being the co-star of Owen Marshall, Counselor at Law, with one of my favorite actors, Arthur Hill, and Lee Majors, and Remy Antoli, and later on David Soul, who became a director-producer. And then later you worked with Leslie Linka-Glatter, who is one of the most in-demand episodic TV directors around, on Homeland. Talk about those two experiences, because they seem to have shaped your career a little bit.
Well, they very much did. So Joan Darling is a legendary film coach, and what she was famous for back in the 90s was taking working actors in Hollywood and helping them make the leap into being the lead. And I got in touch with her, and I said, look, I don't want to be an actor, but I need to understand the process, and I want to understand it from the actor's shoes. I want to actually do that. And so she accepted me. This was a very exclusive class. It was never advertised. It was on a soundstage in Burbank. And after 3 years, it was scene study. You would come in and you would do scenes with other students, and she would critique it. And after I had been doing that for about 2 or 3 years, I was doing a scene, and I was working. And listen, again, going back to the shy thing, I had no training for this. This was my training, and it terrified me. But after 3 years, I was on the stage, and I was doing this scene where it required my legs to just go out from under me and for me to just hit the deck. And when I did that, Joan popped up from her seat because she thought something had happened to me, Annette, right? And when I kept going with the scene, she slowly sat back down. And when the scene was done, she popped up out of her seat again, and she said, "I can make you a leading lady." And I foolishly said, "I don't want to be an actor. I just want to direct." I did not take her up on that. So that was what happened there. And then with Leslie Linka Glatter, she, of course, is a superstar director now, one of the few women directors in Hollywood who has reached this stature, and she's the president of the Directors Guild of America. I was her script supervisor, and she was one of only two women directors that I ever worked for as a script supervisor, because there just weren't directors. We're talking feature films. We're not talking television. And she just stood by me. She has stood by me for my entire career and has had an enormous impact on, you know, my ability to just sort of stay in an industry that is very much against women directors.
I've admired her work for a long time, Annette, and she seems that she's one of those directors that gets not only great performances, no matter what TV program or whatever project she's working on, but she also is very stylistic in terms of the environment of the scenes, the way the action moves, working with the camera. She seems to have all the practices down.
Yes, and I did in 2015, I was invited to shadow the director on Homeland. I spent a month on the set in Berlin, so I was able to see this version of Leslie. My earlier version was on a feature film back in the 90s, and this was, you know, sometime later. And, you know, there to me, what she does that I think is essential is, first of all, you know, she really knows her stuff. She knows what she wants, and she knows how to hire the crew, the cinematographers, the cast to get what she wants. But she also runs a set that is not only tight, but it's a very happy set. You just feel inspired when you're on her set to give her your best work. And it never flags. That energy, that inspiration, that attitude is so much the stamp of the Leslie Linka Glatter set, that the result is she can do a series that is epically hard, like Homeland, year after year after year, and achieve this extraordinary quality.
You're hearing Annette Heywood-Carter. She is the director of the new Fox made-for-TV movie, Daughter of the Bride, co-starring Marcia Gay Harden, Halston Sage, Andrew Richardson, and Aidan Quinn. It premieres next Tuesday night, 8 p.m. Pacific time, your local Fox station. Annette joins us live from Santa Monica, California, this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Sound out with you from New York. Happy that you're along for the ride. 71 degrees going to the bottom of the hour. We're supposed to get rain on and off this afternoon, this evening, and it looks like into the weekend and maybe even in the middle of next week. But no matter what, we hope you're doing great. And if you have a question or comment on remaining minutes with Annette, make the call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. I mentioned earlier that the celebrated director, Oz Scott, was with us on Tuesday. If you missed that episode, which involves him producing the new Tubi made-for-TV movie, Cinnamon, which premiered earlier today, who also had his protege, the writer, director, and executive producer of the film, Brian Keith Montgomery Jr., and from their field, Nikhil Melosi, Nikhil Melosi herself. By the way, season 6 of her series premieres next Wednesday on NYC Life, Channel 25 here in New York, and then later this fall on PBS stations across the country through American Public Television. Check us out at tomorrowbetelevised.com. That's our website where we bring you our episodes after they come here. And you can also check out more than 20 different podcast sites, including the iHeartRadio Podcast Network and other great sites as well. So Annette, what do you like better, doing made-for-TV movies, episodic television, feature film? What in your career, what do you like best?
Well, I love movies. I love movies. And the thing about feature films for the director is that it's your baby. You're in control creatively. And that just is really where I find that I do my very best work, because I have a vision that I bring to the job, and I'm able to realize that vision without too much input. Now, making movies for television is not that different. So that, I guess, would be my second choice. The biggest difference between the two is that you move so fast in television that you really have to pare it down in terms of, you know, what are the critical vision points, and then what are you going to have to just not do, right? You still do a good movie, but it doesn't do everything probably that you set out to do. And then episodic television, I haven't done a lot of that. I thoroughly enjoyed it. The best thing about episodic television is that, you know, you drop in, you hop on a train that's moving very, very fast. You go in, and it requires just the highest level of skill to do a good job, and then you hop off again, and that's just a whole other energy that's a lot of fun. But for me, I guess in a perfect world, I'm a feature film director.
Mm-hmm. Since you are a director, any thoughts about the situation of the Directors Guild, the new contract with the Alliance of TV and Motion Picture Producers, which I believe today is the day that the ratification vote ends?
Yes, I think that the leadership of the Directors Guild did an extraordinary job getting what the directors need. You know, one of the single most important things was the lack of residuals in a global market. And they really got in there and that in a way that I think is surprising, and it's extraordinary. And they also are the first union ever to get language into a contract to deal with AI, artificial intelligence, and the protection of, you know, creatives from AI. And so I'm just extremely pleased with it. But I also have to say, I've been in a lot of the DGA meetings, and it brought a lot of people to the table in terms of discussing our future as creatives and the world that we're living in now, and how to be relevant and be up to date, if not ahead of it. So I'm super pleased with it.
Is there any hope that with the DGA situation, that the Writers Guild and the Screen Actors Union, the unions, the Screen Actors Guild and AFTRA, can, the actors can make a deal, and the Writers Guild and the Alliance can get back to that bargaining table? And they can think, okay, look what the DGA has come up with. We should be able to get that at least.
Absolutely. I'm a member of the Writers Guild as well. So I'm on strike as a writer. And I think that the Directors Guild getting what they did set the bar for what the Writers Guild and what SAG and AFTRA can go in and ask for. You know, they're not in there asking for something now that hasn't been done. They're in there saying, okay, guys, you just said yes to the guild. Now, they've got their own issues that are separate. But I do believe that each guild pulls the other up. We don't work in isolation of each other, even though our guilds are not interrelated, our memberships are. And so we're all fighting for each other's rights and for each other's well-being.
Before you go, Annette, what's next for you in terms of directing? Is it episodic TV? Is it another made-for-TV movie? What's your next TV role?
So I've got three projects. I have a limited series that I just finished writing that is sitting with a producer in the UK that's, you know, waiting for the guild, the Writers Guild strike to end. I also have an independent film that is really very, very important to me that I'm raising money for, looking for a production company for, and it's a transgender family story that's deeply personal to me. It's about the reconciliation between an elderly father and his transgender daughter, who is an adult. And then I'm attached to direct a project that was doing some really good meetings right before. That's another rom-com, but this one is set in New York City, and I'm super excited about that one getting made. I think that might be the first one.
In the meantime, Daughter of the Bride, the made-for-TV movie that Annette Heywood Carter, our guest, has directed. It premieres next Tuesday night on Fox, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on your local Fox stations. So check your local news for Fox in your area. For more details about the program and the service online, go to fox.com. That's fox.com. Reboot.com. Annette Heywood Carter, director of Daughter of the Bride, thanks again for joining us. Congratulations on having this movie out, and hopefully down the road, we would love to have you back to talk about any future TV project you've got. It's been a great pleasure having you on.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Same here, Annette. Take care. All the greatest. And have a super weekend.
You too.
Annette Heywood Carter, director of Daughter of the Bride, joining us live from Santa Monica, California. When we come back, new classic trivia question, four prizes in play, and then, oh, Turner Classic Movies, Where Art Thou? That's the takeaway of the week. All that after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, Spreaker.com, and Tune.com. Together, reach over 85 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Promising singer-songwriter Maria Krause joins Nikki Criss on Mixing It with Nikki Criss this Monday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific on Blog Talk Radio. It's an hour of great entertainment, singing, songwriting, and a lot of fun. Mixing It with Nikki Criss, singer-songwriter Maria Krause, the guest. That's Monday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, BTR always available to you 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised on this Friday afternoon, the 23rd of June, 2023. Simon Abbott with you along for the ride live from Nueva York, 71 degrees at the bottom of the hour, cloudy skies right now in the Big Apple. And we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. In a moment, we'll have our takeaway of the week, O'Turner Classic Movies, Where Are Thou? But first, time for our classic trivia question, and we want to let you know that we have a brand-new question today, and now we have four prizes. That's right, four prizes in play. As before, we've got the wonderful Starbucks reward card courtesy of the BBC. We've got the big best-selling book, Sons of Baseball, Growing Up with a Major League Dad by Mark Graff, the former USA Network Madison Square Garden publicist, has owned Graff Communications Company for a long time. The book was published by Roman and Littlefield. We also have, from Canela Media, the Super Ellis coloring book with crayons. And adding to all of that, we have a brand new prize for the folks at the Mega Content Service Crackle. We have the ability to have a free Redbox movie night. We're going to give you a card that you can stream any movie at Redbox on their service available on smart TV sets and devices up to $6 in value. So all of that can be yours if you know the answer to this question. Our question concerns one of the popular comedies of the 1960s, Petticoat Junction, which ran on CBS from 1963 to 1970. Here's the question. Name the building next to Petticoat Junction. In case you know, you don't know the series, Petticoat Junction is a railroad stop, and there was a very famous building where the action took place next to it. That's the question. Name the building next to Petticoat Junction. Name the building next to Petticoat Junction, and we need an exact answer. And if you know that exact answer, email me, SimonApple04 at Yahoo.com. It's SimonApple04 at Yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. And if you're first with the correct answer, you will win. Make sure that you have the answer by email and you have your name and your mailing address in so that if you win, we can get the prize out to you as soon as possible. Once again, here's the question. Name the building next to Petticoat Junction. That's the popular CBS series that ran from 1963 to 1970. The stars, the late, great Bea Benaderet. Some of you may know her from the Burns and Allen show with George Burns and Grace Allen. Others may know her as the voice of Betty Rubble for many years on the Flintstones. And also starring June Lockhart coming off her three-year run in Lost in Space. Before that, Lassie. Name the building next to Petticoat Junction. Email me, SimonApple04. at yahoo.com. If we don't get a winner by the end of today, we will post the question tomorrow morning on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. That's Facebook at Simon Applebaum and Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. And again, we need the exact name of the building. So get out there, get in to win today, and all the very best. And now it's time for our regular Friday feature, the takeaway of the week, where we highlight a development or two that took place this week that we think you should pay attention to because it could impact the way you watch and use television in the future. And our takeaway this week, O'Turner Classic Movies, Where Art Thou? This week, something really of earthquake proportions took place at the parent of Turner Classic Movies, Warner Brothers Discovery. Warner Brothers Discovery this week fired 100 people. Not just 100 people, 100 top executives. And one of those top executives was the person who had been running Turner Classic Movies for the last 3 years and had been at Warner Brothers Discovery and its previous narrations, Warner Media, Turner, etc., for nearly a quarter century, Pola Chagnon. The announcement was made about 48 hours ago by Kathleen Finch, one of the key top executives, senior executives at Warner Brothers Discovery, which has the oversight over Turner Classic Movies. And it also included a memo from Pola herself saying it was great to work there for so many years. She's looking forward to her next adventure and that kind of thing. And that's not all the story, because The Wrap, 24 hours later, in a follow-up story on Turner Classic Movies, actually was earlier than 24 hours, announced that it wasn't just the head of Turner Classic Movies that had been fired. It was most of the main executives behind Turner Classic Movies, including Charlie Tabasso, the head of programming, the head of marketing, the head of promotion, and the head of public relations. All of those executives gone, given their walking papers, out the door as of today. And that got a lot of people in the Hollywood community buzzing and wondering what's going on with one of our favorite networks. Now, you got to think about this. Turner Classic Movies has been around for a long time. It is a non-commercial service, and it presents a wide variety of classic movies. It really has become the classic movie channel. It's not the highest-rated cable network by a long shot, and it has an incredible devoted following. A following it is nurtured through presenting all sorts of movies. I am a big fan of Turner Classic Movies myself. I have seen a lot of great classic movies and more recent movies because of Turner Classic Movies. And I also love some of their special feature segments, like Noir Alley, which really introduced me to film noir. Eddie Muller, the host of Noir Alley, was on our show nearly 2 years ago. And Silent Sunday Nights with Jacqueline Stewart, who now is involved in a major way with the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, involved with their Academy Museum, which every Sunday night at midnight presents a top-notch silent film from the 1910s and 20s. Or TCM Imports, which presents some of the best movies from around the world. And before that, TCM Underground on Friday nights, the new TCM Musical Matinee hosted by Dave Karger, Saturdays at noon, presenting all sorts of top musicals, classic and more current. And it got people thinking, well, with Pola gone and the top executives gone, what's going to happen with this network? Well, that provoked some people like Steven Spielberg and Martin Scorsese and Paul Thomas Anderson, who have been big fans of Turner Classic Movies for a long time and worked with TCM on the Film Foundation and their roles there, which got a big play at the recent TCM Classic Film Festival this spring, shout in public, hey, what's going on here? Is this the end of our network? It's like the one of the great last lines of a movie from Little Caesar, Ed Jones saying, is this the end of Rico? Well, it got David Zaslav, the head of Warner Brothers Discovery, to go out and see Steven Spielberg and Paul Thomas Anderson and Martin Scorsese for individual and collective meetings with later on, late yesterday, Spielberg, Anderson, and Scorsese issuing a joint statement saying, we've met with David, he's assured us, Turner Classic Movies, no big changes, it's going to be what we know and love, what you know and love, no problem. And then in the last 24 hours, two other developments came out that sort of suggested maybe, that's not totally true. The first one came in the form of the email newsletter that's put together by Vulture, the folks behind New York Magazine. I get that every Thursday. And in the latest edition of Buffering, the headline was a major story about Turner Classic Movies that had this tidbit that had not been reported before, which is that Turner Classic Movies actually made a proposal that would impact the programming itself. Now, you know if you watch Turner Classic Movies that in prime time, sometimes on weekends, and also sometimes special weekends or special days like Memorial Day, that they will have an introduction where one of their hosts, Ben Mankiewicz, Alicia Malone, Eddie Muller, Jacqueline Stewart, Dave Karger introduced the movie, and then at the very end of the film, after the fast fade to black, they'll come back and talk about something that happened about the movie, like a nice tidbit, night anecdote, what's coming up next on TCM and so forth. Well, get this. There was a proposal floating around to say, we're not going to do outros anymore. That's right. No outros. Intros, stay put. Outros, gone. Now, luckily, that did not reach a final decision. It was floated around. Yet, the fact that that was floated around in the first place, I'm sure, got some people in Hollywood and in New York and all throughout the country wondering, really? Really? Is our Turner, is our beloved Turner Classic Movies going to heck? And then came this development that I saw a few hours ago in The Wrap, the popular entertainment news site on the internet. And it's this, that the Turner Classic Movies executives are not the only people from that service that got fired this week. In terms of the entire staff of Turner Classic Movies, which are 90 people, 70 of them have been fired, 7-0, leaving 20 people dealing with Turner Classic Movies, 20. Now, we haven't yet heard in a big way from Michael Olin, who is the new general manager of TCM. He's done it before, very highly regarded executive. He's done some wonderful work with Adult Swim, Cartoon Network, Boomerang, other Turner services under the Warner Bros. Discovery and before that Warner Media umbrella. And he has yet to comment on these new bits of news. Michael, time to comment. Time to open your mouth and let people know what is going on with Turner Classic Movies, because that last bit of news, the fact that it's not just top executives like Polish or Gunn that were laid off, but the majority of your staff for Turner Classic Movies. And it, I believe it is sending a warning sign to a lot of people that this network, if not done for, is going to be radically altered on camera and off camera. And hopefully, Olin will get on some public platform, whether it's Hollywood Reporter, Variety, et cetera, and spill the beans about what is going on with Turner Classic Movies and what is the future, near and long term, for this service that, again, has an incredible fan base. And there are some people, by the way, who believe that because there is no marketing head, that some of the offshoots of Turner Classic Movies, the annual TCM Classic Film Festival, the Classic Cruise, and other situations, that they may be done for in a cost-cutting move. So that's another reason why Olin should get public somewhere. And if you'd like to come on this program, go for it and discuss what is going on with TCM and where it's headed under his new management. I also invite you to consider that this takeaway of the week has even bigger consequences for cable networks overall and for how you watch television. Here's what I mean. Have you noticed that in recent years that the format of some of your favorite cable networks have changed? For example, you don't see scripted shows or miniseries on USA Network anymore unless they're from Peacock first. That it's all unscripted and reruns and movies. Have you noticed that TBS and TCM now rarely do original scripted shows unless they're acquired from someplace else? Or Sci-Fi Channel does not do original scripted unless it is acquired from Canadian television or other places like Reginald the Vampire and The Ark? That's because 90% of all U.S. households now have a smart TV set, smart TV device, and they're also watching multi-channel bundles like Zumo and Pluto TV and Tubi and Pizzazz and Plex and Friendly TV through those smart TV products. 90%. And what is going on is a fundamental shift in doing habits. They have decided, they've made the call, from now on, we are watching television this way. We're using television this way, and as a result, we're pulling the plug on our cable or satellite subscription. Earlier this week, some new studies came out that declared universe of cable and satellite customers, household customers, has gone from 90% of all U.S. households to 50%. That's a 40% drop. And alarm bell, maybe for some, that within 2 years, that universe will shrink to less than 40% within 2 years, by this time in 2025, a 10% drop at least. And what it says, or could say, really is the following. If you are a cable network or a satellite network, that is your main source of distribution, maybe it's time to get all in, really all in, being distributed by smart TV products and multi-channel bundles. Because you may not last, or your original programming may be cut or eliminated, if it hasn't already, if that drop is realized among cable and satellite households. And if you are a cable or satellite operator, it may be time to radically alter what you carry on your cable service. That it's time to put multi-channel bundles and mega content services like Netflix, Prime Video, Peacock, etc. on your service. Because that may be the way that in this decade and beyond, you'll keep going. So what is going on with TCM right now is an indicator, in a way, of the bigger picture of television, that we truly are living in an absolutely transformational time where the way we watch may have been forever altered. It's no longer, at least for most people, through a cable or satellite system attached to a cord. That cord is getting cut, and the cutting is accelerating. And it's time that networks like Turner Classic Movies, if they're not all in with smart TV products and multi-channel bundles, get all in and get all in soon. And if you're a cable or satellite operator, now is the time to start making deals with these multi-channel bundles and with the bundles that are being put together by the smart TV products themselves, from Samsung, from LG, from Vizio, from Sony, etc. Because right now, it's getting clearer and clearer all the time that the sky for TV viewers is a universe, is cloudy for cable and satellite, and for networks like Turner Classic Movies, and it is very bright and getting brighter for watching and using smart TV sets, devices, and multi-channel bundles. And I hope that no matter what happens, that there is room for Turner Classic Movies or something like it, the way we have it now, in this big picture. I'd like to hear what you think about this, our takeaway of the week. You can, if you can, the next couple of moments, you can call me, 646-652-2906, that's 646-652-2906, or leave a thought in the chat room. Or if you're hearing this on replay, you can email me at simonapple04@yahoo.com, simonapple04@yahoo.com. You can also find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. Or leave a thought in our question box at our homepage, in our website, tomorrowbetelevised.com. That's tomorrowbetelevised.com. I'd love to hear from you, and whatever response we get, we'll pass it along to all of you, our listeners. Well, that will do it for this edition of Tomorrow Be Televised. Again, I want to thank our guest in the first half hour, Annette Haywood Carter, the director of the new Fox made-for-TV movie, first one in a long while, Daughter of the Bride, starring Marcia Gay Harden, Alston Stage, Andrew Richardson, and Aidan Quinn. Premieres this coming Tuesday, that's June 27th, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time on your local Fox station. Again, for all details, go to fox.com. And remember, If you missed our episode on Tuesday with Oz Scott, the brilliant, prolific director and producer of episodic television, of theater, along with Brian Keith Montgomery Jr., the writer, executive producer of the new Tubi made-for-TV movie, Cinemon, the first proposed series of Black Noir cinema films, as well as Michaela Melosi, the host and executive producer of Bare Feet, Michaela Melosi, we did on Tuesday. Well, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's blogtalkradio.com/televised. You can also check our website, swabbytelevised.com. And, of course, go to any of our wonderful 20-plus podcast sites like Acast, like Odyssey, like Apple and Google Podcasts, the iRadio Podcast Network, and many others. And they appreciate your support, your listening, and so do we. Again, we won't be with you on Monday because yours truly is going to be dealing with jury duty for the first time in a very long while. Hopefully, we will be done with jury duty by later in the week. And if so, we will be with you for a two-hour version of our show that will wrap up the month of June 2023 in great style. Joining us then will be, starting in the order of appearance or listening, the executive producer and showrunner of the new Hulu series Secret Chef, supervised by David Chang, Patrick Dowdy, at home with Genevieve host, the wonderful Genevieve Gorder, plus from the new syndicated series from WISH-TV in Indianapolis, Lifestyle Live, now running on 20-plus stations around the country, executive producer Peggy McClellan, and the creator of the recent Tribeca Festival shown TV series pilot Driven, David Shane. That's all coming up a week from today, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. If you came in late on today's episode, want to catch up an episode you missed, it's very simple. Go to our homepage and enjoy. That includes any time this weekend. The homepage, Tomorrow Will Be Televised, that's blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. And don't forget, our website is running 24/7 too throughout the weekend. SwabbyTelevised.com from the fine folks at On Podium. That's SwabbyTelevised.com. And, of course, all of our 20-plus podcast platforms. We love hearing from you, as always. So what do you think about our episodes this week? What do you think about my thought yesterday that we should see far more Broadway theater on television and that the Broadway theater community should take more opportunities on television? And how about reviving the underrated 1960s game show Seven Keys, as well as the classic anthology series, One Step Beyond? Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. That's the email you use for our classic trivia question. Don't forget we have our brand new prize from the folks at Crackle. It's the new free Redbox movie night. We'll give you a card so you can stream any movie up to $6 in value. And it gives you all the details. Plus, we have the Starbuck Awards card for the BBC, the brand new best-selling book, Sons of Baseball, and the Canella Kids coloring book for their series Super Ellis with accompanying crayons. Once again, one more time the question, name the building next to Petticoat Junction. Name the building, exact name, next to Petticoat Junction. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. And don't forget, you can always use that email to suggest an item for our regular feature, A Show to Know. Is there a TV show you like that doesn't get enough attention? We want to highlight it and use your thought on the air, and we need to know from you. So email me, give us all the details about the show and why we should feature it. If we do, you get the credit. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. And remember, you can find me anytime on social media, specifically LinkedIn and Facebook at Simon Applebaum and Twitter at UBCSimonWBT. That's UBCSimonTWBT. However you hear us and however you communicate with me, I communicate back with you within 24 hours. That's our promise to you because, as we always say around here, what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed here are those of the participants. They are not those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Andy Cho is BeatStars General Manager. Jay Sonnenberg is Head of Content. Website service provided by On Podium, the Internet's great podcast outpost. Guitar Fakus is our web coordinator. For Tomorrow We Televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. We hope you have a sensational weekend ahead, no matter what the weather. We'll be back, not Monday, Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. You know where, Blog Talk Radio, Speaker TuneIn Radio, and all of our web and podcast destinations. Whatever you're doing between now and then, please make it safe, and please make it great. And incidentally, if you are, like myself, going on jury duty this Monday, treasure the opportunity. It really is a way to make a difference in how our country works and goes. It really is a very special honor to have. So treasure it. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.